Are you tired of feeling tired? Do you wish you could turn back the clock on aging? NT-Factor Lipids is the breakthrough supplement that's scientifically proven to repair and renew your body's cells. NT-Factor Lipids are identical to the phospholipids found in your cellular membranes. They've been shown to repair mitochondrial damage, a primary cause of biological aging. In clinical trials, NT-Factor therapy resulted in a 26.8% increase in mitochondrial function, restoring it to levels found in young adults. NT-Factor has also been shown to reduce fatigue by up to 43% and has even been shown to significantly reduce a wide range of symptoms and improve the quality of life in patients with various conditions like chronic fatigue and those undergoing chemotherapy. I've been using NT-Factor for years and prescribe it for my patients. You can find the NT-Factor line of nutritional formulas at your favorite health food store or online retailer. Or, to order direct, call 800-982-9158, 800-982-9158, or go to ntfactor.com. That's ntfactor.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. You know, we often talk about breakthrough therapies here on Intelligent Medicine. We talk about diet. We talk about vitamins and supplements. We talk about innovative anti-aging strategies. But it's all for naught if we don't have the wherewithal to dispense truthful and accurate information about some of these breakthrough therapies because of censorship, because of shadow banning, and also because of regulatory impediments to your access to practitioners of your choice and innovative supplements of your choice. And so we're going to wax a little political today. An organization that I really love is the Alliance for Natural Health. The Alliance for Natural Health stands as a guardian of your right to choose natural, sustainable healthcare options. And because big pharma and big food, big chem and big government are protecting the broken status quo, and they're trying to eliminate your ability to choose the healthcare options and treatment modalities that resonate with you, I became a board member of ANH 20 years ago, and now I've ascended to the rank of president. And with me today is the executive director of the Alliance for Natural Health, ANH-USA.org. He's Dr. Rob Verkerk. Rob is an internationally acclaimed expert in health, agricultural, and environmental sustainability. He's kind of a Swiss Army knife on integrative medicine. He's point-and-shoot kind of guy where he can discuss virtually anything under the sun, ranging from things that ravage the environment to innovative approach to disease. And I would read his entire CV, but it would take about 10 minutes because he is UK-based. He founded the Alliance for Natural Health International, ANH-international.org, which is a pan-European and international non-governmental organization dedicated to promoting and protecting natural approaches to healthcare. And now he is stateside, acting as our executive director here for ANH-USA.org. And we're working together to improve your access to treatments and information of your choice. And so it's with great pleasure that I introduce Rob Verkerk. Rob's been a frequent contributor here on Intelligent Medicine, known to many of you already. Rob, it's a pleasure having you here on Intelligent Medicine.
Ron, as always, amazing to be talking with you, and fantastic to be on the same continent. I'm talking to you from just outside of Austin, Texas.
Indeed, yeah, because often we have to schedule these things. I have to be early in the morning because I don't want to keep you up too late at night in your base in the UK, near London. But here you're in the United States, and I understand you just attended a very interesting conference, an anti-aging conference called RadFest on the West Coast. Did you glean any information about some of the latest advances in anti-aging medicine there? And tell us a little bit about what you spoke about.
So yes, look, it was a, as always, a fantastic conference. The Radical Coalition for Life Extension organized it, and you'll know people like Bill Falloon that have been involved for a long time with Radical Life Extension. It is really an incredible diversity of people that we met. That there were about 700 people, ranging from doctors, different kinds of practitioners, but also
Silicon Valley folks, I would imagine. Yeah,
yeah, a lot of big money people who are spending vast sums of money. You know, people like Dave Asprey were there. You know, selling his latest shockwave therapy device for what he thought was a very reasonable price of $15,000.
Known to us as the developer of Bulletproof Coffee.
Correct. So I was there. I talked on behalf of our sponsor. So our sponsor, International Anti-Aging Systems, that we have worked closely with for two decades now, sponsored us there as ANH. So we had a stand. We were able to talk to hundreds of people during the course of the 3 days, 4 days it was actually. And I also spoke, I gave one lecture specifically on peptides, which is an area that we've been very, very closely involved in with International Anti-Aging Systems, bringing some novel natural peptides to the market.
Now, that's interesting because today I got an email from a patient saying, I'm considering using peptides. What do you think? And I said, well, I don't know much about it, but I will share as much information as I can gather with my listening audience. So stay tuned. So here it is a mere few hours later. So maybe you can tell us a little bit about peptides.
Yes. I mean, obviously, peptides are information chemicals. They can do everything from dock directly with DNA. More commonly, they have more indirect effects, but pretty much as signaling and activation molecules, they can do the list of what the functions are is almost endless. By definition, of course, a peptide is a chain of amino acids. So you get anything that's greater than a chain longer than 20 amino acids will be a polypeptide. Essentially, the ones that most people are interested in using are short peptides, less than 20, or even very short peptides, less than 5. Mm-hmm. The vast majority of them that are now on the market are nature identical and or synthetic. So, and of course, this is the very area that pharma industry is exploring as well. Pharma is much more interested in modifying peptides.
Right.
And of course,
to get the patent rights to them. Yeah.
Exactly. And they have created some very, very dangerous peptides. So one of the fascinating things that is happening is as pharma moves on from the original blockbuster drug patent cliff that hit in about 2010, it is moving increasingly into the field of biologics and biosimilars, which, if you like, is creating this convergence with the space that natural medicine has been in since kingdom come, been doing it for millions of years, as it happens. So we now have a specific problem. Ron, you'll remember we talked about this, that 22 peptides were put on the FDA compounding naughty list, category mm-hmm. 2 bulk substances list, last year. Literally.
And what are some of those?
Well, BCP-157 would mm-hmm. be one, Epitalon.
Which is a healing peptide. It's used often by bodybuilders and athletes to facilitate recovery, from what I understand.
Exactly. Epitalon is another well-known one, which is a natural analog of a pineal peptide. And I mean, there is a huge body of work on Epitalon. That's a synthetic analog. So in essence, in order to get the FDA's justification for putting these peptides on this category 2 bulk substances list is a potential human safety concern. And this is where the whole issue gets very, very confused for many people, because yes, there are some peptides that can be intrinsically toxic. They can be genotoxic. They can be cytotoxic. They can be toxic to our genes, our DNA. They can be toxic to cells. Mm-hmm. They can be toxic to the immune system. So they can be immunogenic. But the fascinating thing is, if you look at the natural peptides, we consume natural peptides every time we consume a meal. So mm-hmm. plants produce them, microbes produce them, animals produce them.
Would glutathione and melatonin be examples of peptides? Am I on the right track?
They are. Insulin is an example of a peptide. So yep. many hormones are peptides. Mm-hmm. And herein lies, you know, this is what happens when you start configuring amino acids and you can, you know, modulate them and alter them in any which way. The fascinating thing is, I think, where the rubber meets the road is how we handle natural peptides that humans have been exposed to either in plants or via microbes or through animals, vis-a-vis the synthetic ones. And if the synthetic ones are natural analogs, we would argue immediately you should not have to prove safety. Why? Because safety has already been proven. Or a whole bunch of them that have had decades of use through compounding, that have a safe history of use, should also be grandfathered in. But bottom line, that they have profound effects. The natural ones that we are working with are, and we're facilitating, you know, an approach whereby these can be sold in multiple markets around the world as natural products, so dietary supplements in the United States. Mm-hmm. And they essentially have a number of key functions. One of the most important is their ability to essentially turn gene switches. So they create an environment which, if you like, epigenetic expression is optimized for that specific environment. The second key effect that they have is that they basically trigger pluripotent stem cells. So pluripotent stem cells.
This suggests a potential regenerative function. I think that there a lot of these are in sort of the regenerative anti-aging arena, and that's why they have been embraced by the anti-aging community.
Exactly. So as we age, we obviously increase the autophagy, the amount of senescence, our telomeres shorten after each cell division. And what these particular peptides do is change all of that. So you can measure that using, say, true diagnostics test that measures your omics, your epigenetic age, that looks at your biological age vis-a-vis your chronological age. Built into that assay is now the Symphony age test that looks at the relative age of 11 organ systems in your body. Mm-hmm. And what I think is really
that's based on like methylation, but not just overall methylation, but targeted. So you might say that, you know, you have the liver of a 50-year-old, but fortunately you have the brain of a 35-year-old. I mean, in other words, aging may occur at different paces within the body. So they're getting more and more sophisticated about measuring aging. It's a little primitive just to measure telomeres. Yeah. You know, now we have the methylation clocks, and now we have what you mentioned, like an organ-specific assay. And it's only going to get better. So the technology is really advancing.
It's spot on. And of course, I think from a sort of patient perspective, and even from a therapeutic relationship point of view, the third generation test that's now included in True Diagnostics is the pace of aging, the Dunedin pace of aging test. So that will basically, if you get a 1.0 score on that, it basically tells you are aging in line with your chronological age. Mm-hmm. If you get a 1.2, it means you're aging more quickly. Mm-hmm. If you get a 0.8, you're doing well, because you are effectively slowing your epigenetic aging. And there's a fantastic clinician in the US called Dr. Bill Lawrence, who happens to be a JD as well as a PhD. And he is running trials actually with medical doctors. He has about 150 doctors that he is working with, and he is seeing this consistent progression. On average, I mean, some of the doctors have been only using these peptides for a matter of months. Others have been using them for over 4 years. But on average, he's seeing over a 4.5 year decrease in their biological age compared with their chronological age. And you know, if you do that, the impact on all-cause mortality, you know, if we think about the fact that the vast majority of the burden of disease that we face in society is the result of diseases of aging, neurodegenerative diseases, cardiometabolic diseases. So if you can reverse the age, I mean, we've got to get past the cosmetics of anti-aging, if you like.
And so it's actually changing the paradigm, getting away from combating disease to attacking some of the fundamental processes of the biological clock that leads us to frailty and sarcopenia and neurodegeneration and immunosenescence and all those processes that sort of inevitably unwind as one approaches a centenary years.
Absolutely. One of the things I have to say, Ron, that I was a little disappointed about at Radfest is that there is an obsession with looking for stem cell therapy, exosome therapy, peptide therapy, various forms of frequency therapy. There was no mention other than what we said from the ANH about the importance of, you know, connecting with nature.
In other words, in effect, exercise. Monetizable therapies, right? Yeah. Because we, you know, we still have to stick to basics and fundamentals. And I think that, you know, that's a little bit the thrust, if I can change gears slightly, that's being introduced by what's happening on the political front here in the U.S. You know, we have RFK, who is running, you know, frankly, a bit of an eccentric campaign. You know, these third-party candidates, unlike, you know, you have a multi-party system in the U.K., you know, we have basically, a one-party system, whether they're the Democrats or the Republicans, when it comes to major issues like healthcare. He really introduced a very fascinating perspective, you know, like him or not, on, you know, other aspects of his belief system with regard to foreign policy or, you know, taxation or whatever. He really centered the dialogue around a very, very well thought out critique of what's going wrong with American healthcare. You know, our approach that's very drug-oriented, disease-oriented, rather than supporting a preventive approach. And then what happened is he became disenchanted with the Democrats. He joined forces with Donald Trump, love him or hate him, and suddenly he had a bigger platform. At the very same time, we had front and center Callie and Casey Means, who were beautifully are articulating a critique of the American healthcare system. And suddenly, this has become front and center in our current political dialogue, which I think is a very, very, excuse the pun, healthy thing.
Exactly. Look, I think potentially having RFK Jr. in a senior position, there's talk potentially of him heading up HHS, you know, could be the very best thing to really sort the healthcare problem out moving forward. One of the difficulties we have in the United States, obviously, is that the burden of insurance payments coupled, so that creates one of the biggest stresses that people have in their lives, which is financial stress, coupled with the burden of disease and the way in which this burden of disease increasingly affects people's ability to make a living. It increasingly impacts, as we see, diseases of neurodegeneration, dementia, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, taking over people's lives, taking time away from other family members. And because we have such a top-heavy demographic age distribution, these problems are only going to amplify in the years ahead. So we cannot go on as we have been over the last 10, 20 yeah. years.
It's clearly a national security problem, really threatens it's an existential problem, I think, for the United States, because, it drives, we might, in various programs to shore up our medical system. It's headed in the wrong direction. And so we're really hearing, I think, a very excellent critique. The problem, though, is, I mean, inherently, it's a tough situation because traditionally Republicans are anti-regulation, and so it's kind of a shotgun wedding between RFK, who proposes sweeping environmental regulations, and Trump, who is beholden to a Republican Party that's traditionally resisting environmental regulations. They basically say, let her rip, let the economy roar. And I think that inherently there is some tension there. But look, I think the main thing is whether or not, we approve of that alliance, the RFK-Trump alliance, some of these important issues are being broached in this campaign. Previously, yeah. It was relegated to eccentric candidates like Marianne Williamson, who had an excellent health platform, but the rest was a little bit woo-woo, and she didn't have a ghost of a chance to make an impact. Perhaps this will center the dialogue a little bit.
Look, the classic, if you like, manifesto of both Republicans and Democrats has changed dramatically over the last half century or so. If you imagine that the Democrats were born out of the civil rights movement, or not, they really propelled it, and of course the Kennedy family were involved in that through civil liberties in order to achieve freedom and democracy. And now we see the Democrat Party basically saying we need to row back on those freedoms. We need to, in fact, restrict certain freedoms in order to maintain democracy and develop a more authoritarian system.
So, and that's been RFK's argument in his basic disenchantment with the Democrats, is that he says that the character of the party has changed. And which yeah. brings us to the issue of shadow banning and censorship. And this is a battle that we at A&H fight to get our message out, because we're not favored in the algorithms. And in fact, some of our things are the information that we want to purvey to the public is really minimized and even banned. So we have a Free Speech for Health campaign, Free Speech with a number 4, health.org, I think is the place where that. Correct. Tell us about that campaign, yeah. because that, I think, is a very important campaign, because, whether or not you're on the left or whether you're on the right, I think that all our intelligent medicine listeners and all the people who are part of A&H on both ends of the spectrum really think it's important that we have the opportunity to message.
Absolutely. So Google is a huge player as a tech platform. It is where people go typically to find out what's happening in the world. And the perverse thing about the modern world, in which people have essentially relocated their physical town squares to the digital town squares of social media platforms, is essentially we're now under the control of private entities. These are private corporations. What one of the reasons that the Murty versus Missouri case failed at the last hurdle in the Supreme Court is because
Murthy, who was the Surgeon General at the time. Right?
Murthy was the Surgeon General, and of course it was the two states, Missouri and Louisiana, that took the case along with Ray Bhattacharya and others that were involved with the Great Barrington Declaration, and essentially, if you look at the evidence within that case, you will see huge evidence, not just of coercion, but bullying, where essentially, if you look at the slash accounts, White House officials were basically saying to Facebook and others, if you don't remove, for mm-hmm. example, a specific RFK Jr. post about the concerns over COVID vaccines, for example.
And even more modestly, you know, whether or not you're pro-vaccine or anti-vaccine, even more modestly, the Great Barrington Declaration basically called for less of a lockdown and more of a selective lockdown. You know, perhaps the aged and more vulnerable people should be sequestered, but that we should looking back on it, it's not such a radical proposal, and it's a proposal that was followed successfully by other countries like Sweden, with better outcomes economically and comparable health outcomes, or even better.
Yeah, the difficulty, I think, for everyone is that there was, it's very hard to see what might have happened had it been done differently. And of course, what some players, when they look at Sweden as, say, a prime example of what happens with light lockdowns, is, of course, they then did take up the vaccines fully, and you start getting a lot of noise in your data system, and it becomes very difficult to determine what might be the ongoing causes of all-cause mortality. However you look at it, you know, there are many, many countries, in fact, the majority in the Western world now, that are still have elevated all-cause mortality. Trying to understand what is driving that is, of course,
there's something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear.
Yeah, and it, you know, I think the bottom line is that there are so many cofactors working together, and once you start looking at the combinations of stress, the impact of insecurity, because we're sitting teetering on the edge potentially of a global war, a third world war, I would suggest that even what we're in at the moment, to some degree, is a form of global war. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, we've got environmental chemicals. We see this huge increase every year in the amount of environmental chemicals we're subjected to. On top of that, we're seeing a dramatic increase in the new to nature EMFs to which we're being exposed to as more and more satellites go into orbit and we move.
Which I just had a fascinating discussion with Dr. Devra Davis about this. I know you're a good colleague of hers, talking about EMFs that will also drop this week on Intelligent Medicine.
Yeah, so it's another great experiment in which the biosphere and human beings are the guinea pigs in this experiment.
Yeah.
We have no previous understanding of what these particular waveforms, because it's not just the frequencies. A lot of people focus on the frequencies, but it's the waveform that carries information. And as we understand more about living systems, we realize that we are not just genetic and biochemical beings. We are energetic beings in which the, if you like, the status of the electromagnetic field, or biofield, if you like, within and without us, is crucial to our overall health. And it may be that EMFs have these non-thermal impacts. And once again, we see ICNIRP, the international organization that oversees safety levels for EMFs, focusing only on thermal effects.
With a paper recently that whitewashed their dangers coming out of the World Health Organization. It's an interesting time because COVID has been a teachable moment. You know, basically, we have become, many Americans have become disenchanted with health authorities. They messaged in alarmist ways and inaccurate ways about COVID in an effort to marshal the population into compliance. And so I think that this is an extraordinarily good opportunity for ANH to enlist the skeptics, people who are now concerned about mainstream health messaging. An example of which is Wikipedia. If you look up, you know, the word acupuncture in Wikipedia, it basically says it's a system of quackery. If you look up naturopathic medicine, it's basically considered a delegitimized pseudo medicine. In very pejorative terms. So what we get from mainstream sources is highly dubious, and that's why we need alternative channels like ANH.
And that's feeding directly into the AI system. So if you keep an eye on what ChatGPT obviously is not being updated to the same extent, but young people are increasingly reliant on AI systems. So Google Gemini is really interesting to ask questions of. We've taken out a subscription in order that we can evaluate it. We'll be publishing our analyses of it in due course. But it is devastating to see how closely aligned all of the AI systems that, after all, are programmed with information that those who program it want to give it.
Right. So, it deprioritizes, delegitimizes some of the natural solutions that we tend to emphasize.
Yeah. So coming back to our freedom for speech campaign, critical to that is to try and knock out at Google, who own YouTube, their medical misinformation policy. It is definitely the big tech attempting to essentially follow the edicts that were developed at the Nobel Prize Summit in Washington, D.C. in May 2023. And that basically means anything that does not comply with either what national authorities such as the NIH or the World Health Organization is saying shall be deemed misinformation.
Yeah.
And
let's take some example. Your ketogenic diet, which we know has therapeutic benefit. I mean, not for everyone, but in certain circumstances, it provides benefit. Ketogenic diet is the official doctrine is that it is harmful and dangerous, and that's what you get. It's basically garbage in, garbage out. You know, we know this about computers is that, you know, they're programmed to spit back what we program them with. And if we use large language models, which partake of sources such as Wikipedia and, you know, the conventional, the American Medical Association, World Health Organization, we're basically going to get garbage health information.
Correct. So if you look at, coming back to RadFest, One of the peptides that was discussed at length. In fact, Bill Falloon's foundation has done extensive work of this peptide that's been known, for 40 years. But it is the more recent research that is completely stunning in terms of being a peptide that could be central to trying to reduce the burden of disease. It's thymosin itself, which obviously comes from the thymus. And lo and behold, as we left RadFest, we see a bulletin coming in from the FDA notifying us that there's going to be an advisory committee to the FDA meeting coming up in December. We've already gone back to Bill and colleagues. That's going to be discussing whether thymosin should be added to the FDA naughty list and be removed.
And incidentally, there are therapeutic benefits to this, and I've actually, I haven't used it myself. I've used it in the past, many years ago. But recently I heard from a colleague of mine that his wife became very sick with COVID. He had thymosin available to him, injected her with thymosin, and within 24 hours, she had, complete resolution of her symptoms. But also, from the anti-aging standpoint, we know that the thymus is an organ which is very large, fist size in a newborn, and that involutes almost to invisibility in aged individuals. So this organ, which pumps out T cells, is very germane to the phenomenon of immunosenescence, which is one of the reasons why people get sick and die. They get cancer, they get infections, pneumonia, the old man's friend, that whole thing. So
cancer especially,
absolutely. Can I just put us on pause for a second, because we've got a lot more to talk about, and we divide our podcast into two parts. I just want to mention, give out a little bit of an announcement. It's freespeechforhealth.org, freespeechforhealth.org is our domain. Also, check out drhoffman.com/ANH. If you go to drhoffman.com/ANH, we're looking for membership. We're looking for donations. I'll be matching all donations up to a total of $5,000. And so if you give something, you'll double your contribution automatically. That's drhoffman.com/ANH. And we'll continue our fascinating discussion with Dr. Robert Verkerk, Rob will be back in just a moment to talk about all things on the natural health front and also some exciting opportunities for political and legal initiatives that can push back against regulatory overreach. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.